Hello and welcome to Holden Village. Today is July 20th, 2006. Today's session is titled Using Shareholders' Resolutions to Encourage Corporate Responsibility, presented by Steve Balls, number BAH-S-2006-06. Let's listen in.
This is the last session that I'll be doing at Holden Village. My wife and I have to leave tomorrow to get our daughter off to a Girl Scout trip to the Boundary Waters in Minnesota. She leaves on Sunday, so she's going to have a tight turnaround time. This has been a special time for me. I've learned as much from these sessions as I've conveyed. We've had a great deal of discussion, and I thank you all for that. What I'd like to do for this last session is to talk about shareholders' resolutions. As you know, the ELCA and most other mainline churches have been very active in recent years in presenting shareholders' resolutions to corporations to encourage corporate responsibility. Most of you have heard me say before that I first became interested in the subject matter because I got involved in a shareholders' resolution submitted by the Presbyterian Church in Milwaukee. Involving Alice Chalmers, and we negotiated with Alice Chalmers, the tractor manufacturer, to in fact agree to give advance notice of plant closings. That had not been their practice, and they agreed on a company-wide policy, thanks to the shareholders' resolution, to give 90 days notice. Not an earth-shaking result, but a result they eventually closed the plant that meant a lot for that community and meant a lot for the workers. As part of that, they would take the 90-day period and negotiate with the city about some sort of package upon leaving. It wasn't a very generous package because Alice Chalmers didn't have much money, but indeed it made a difference. It was an interesting thing to me. What I'd like to accomplish today is to discuss a number of topics. First of all, a threshold topic: should we ever own stock in irresponsible corporations? There are a lot of irresponsible corporations out there, and should we ever own stock in them? Assuming that we decide that in some cases that we will own stock in corporations that aren't crystal pure or crystal clean, what difference can we make as shareholders in influencing management? Talking primarily here about publicly held corporations where there is a wide market for the stock, I'll talk a little bit about how to use shareholders' resolutions, what they can be used for and what they cannot be used for. And then we will conclude with two items: are shareholders' resolutions effective? Talk a little bit about what the ELCA has done in the Interfaith Center for Corporate Responsibility. But let's open it up with the first question. Let us assume that we know that a corporation is engaging in bad practices abroad. Those bad practices might be polluting the environment, not voluntarily complying with high environmental standards in Africa or Southeast Asia. Let's assume that we know that the corporation has been convicted of paying of bribes. Let's assume that we know that the corporation is paying 50 cents an hour for labor, but paying $10 an hour or $15 an hour at home in the United States. Should we ever own stock in a corporation that is a bad actor? We're going to have a little competition here, I can see, this hour. Any thoughts there?
That's a big mountain. That's a lot of...
That'd be a big commitment to say that.
It would.
Yeah.
That's a lot of...
Yeah.
I mean...
Why is that a big mountain?
Because it's not one issue. It's not like... executive pay or frou-frou for a corporate headquarters or one issue like that. There's so many issues bound up there that it would be a challenge.
Well, I think there's a point there. I mean, it would be a challenge. How do most of you own stock? Most of you probably own stock through retirement funds, life insurance policies, mutual funds. It is very difficult to know who the good actors are, who the bad actors are. Likewise, what is a responsible and irresponsible corporation has been a subject of much discussion in this group over the last week or so. If the prevailing wage rate is 25 cents an hour in a country, we pay 50 cents an hour for labor, but for the same labor, we pay $15 an hour. Is that a bad or unethical practice? I raise the issue simply because I don't have an answer, but I think it is a fair threshold question to raise. At some point, corporate conduct, can it not be so bad that we ought to divest in that? Often church pension funds are asked to divest. College pension funds are asked to divest. There is a point where corporations cross the line. A line that was a point that was discussed much 10 to 15 to 20 years ago, of course, was investment in South Africa and apartheid. And at some point, there was a decision by many churches, many colleges, to divest. Paul, do you know what Augustana College did in those days? Was that an issue?
We did
divest. Yeah. So at some point, although we are going to talk about how you can use your stock ownership to make a difference, at some point, the difference that you might make is simply to divest. Court conduct can be so bad. But you're right, it's a big mountain to climb. There are definitional problems. I also think that at some point that churches, through their pension funds and other funds, can use their leverage as a shareholder to effectuate a positive change. It is hard to do. Not a lot of that happens. But it's something that we ought to think about. Are there those corporations out there that are so inconsistent with our values as a church, with our values of sustainability, our values of pursuing justice, that we simply don't invest in the first place? Well, let's suppose that we have stock, or that we are on a board of a church that has a stock. Is there any difference that we can make as shareholders in encouraging corporations to act responsibly? Just a footnote, what is responsible conduct? We've been talking about that this week, and I think most of us have agreed that responsible conduct of a corporation generally entails sustainable, the corporation is engaging in sustainable practices, sustainable environmental practices, sustainable economic practices, that is when they leave, that there's something there in the country, and sustainable social practices, that the social fabric is not interfered with, government systems, and so on. There's a bunch of don'ts, of course, also don't employ child labor, don't have unsafe conditions, don't pay less than a minimum wage. What difference can we make as shareholders in ensuring the corporations act responsibly? Can we make much difference? We can do shareholders' resolutions, but is there anything else we can do with our own investments? We're going to talk about shareholders' resolutions. Anything else you can think of? We're investing our IRA. What difference can we make? Yes?
Well, if we invest more in companies that are known to use those sustainable practices, and more dollars, because people become more aware and put more dollars in those companies that maybe have been researched by organizations we can trust. One thing I can think of.
Okay, so we can invest in those corporations that act in a socially responsible way. And there are numerous ways to do that. One way is that we can research it ourselves. That is difficult to do, is it not? I mean, where do you go to research it? There are many websites, however. Many companies have their reports from the Global Reporting Initiative online about their practices with respect to social responsibility. Let me pause here, and that is about 50% of the world's largest corporations voluntarily report on sustainability reporting guidelines. It's a set of guidelines that is promulgated by the Global Reporting Initiative. We talked about this a little bit last time. We have well-defined rules with respect to auditors, CPAs, in auditing corporations and providing accurate information. There is building up another industry of individuals that will audit corporations for sustainable practices. In a way, it's in its infancy. CPAs have been around for a long time. I'm a CPA, have volumes after volumes of FASB rules and other rules about defining what income is, what income isn't. But look at what the Global Reporting Initiative and those who report under that report about environmental impacts, energy usage, water pollution, biodiversity, supplies, compliance, transport, labor practices, human rights practices, including non-discrimination, child labor, indigenous rights, impact on society and community, what they do to help out the societies and the communities. So we could seek as shareholders to invest in responsible corporations. We can fight them with shareholders' resolutions, or we can use the market mechanism. I'm glad you're here, because I was just going to ask about the market mechanism. The market mechanism to encourage corporations to act responsibly. One way to do that is through socially responsible mutual funds. There are two kinds that kind of screen out bad investments, gambling, tobacco, sometimes defense contractors, sometimes alcohol. That's one thing we can do. The Presbyterian Church recommends to members of the Presbyterian Church that that ought to be the first thing that they do. Presbyterian Church helps out with their own set of socially responsible funds. John, if I could put you on the spot, does that make a difference when 3 to 5% of our investment is guided by social principles?
3 to 5, okay.
I mean, that is, you often hear that it's up to 10, 15%. I don't believe that statistic. Statistic that seems more reliable is 3 to 5% of investments are made through some social screen.
Right. Now, I think it does make a difference. It's a complicated difference, right? If you're a manager of a company, you're worried about your stock price, right? And so if people decide not to own stock in your company, what happens to your stock price? It goes down. Okay. So and that obviously as a signal to a manager has an effect. And so if you were CalPERS, if you were the California Pension System, and you decided to sell all your stock in a company, CalPERS has hundreds of billions of dollars in investments because all the teachers and everybody works in California. That would get the company to stand up and take notice right away because it would have a big impact on its stock price. Okay? But now think about it, and here's where things get a little bit complicated. What happens next? When we talked the other day about if we sell stock in a company, or a company does things that are socially responsible and it drives down their profits as a result, and their stock price falls, what's more likely to happen?
Sell.
Well, let's say this: the company itself does it. So this is the effect on a bad company of selling the stock, is to reduce its stock price. Mm-hmm. If a good company engages in this, if there's a symmetry here, it turns out, and their profits go down, what will happen to the stock price?
Well, people are going to, if you're going on a growth model only, if you're looking at numbers and you're anticipating a healthy rate of growth over 5 years and the investment digs into that, then people won't want to own that company.
Right, so your stock price will go down.
Yeah.
Okay, and so now Ellen's stock market advisor, she's the one with all the money in our family, said, you know, there's a sin fund. There's a fund that just invests in tobacco companies, alcohol companies, right? And the reason was that during the tobacco wars especially, people stopped wanting to own tobacco stock, and the price went down. So what happened to the dividends?
It went up as a percentage.
Right. Yeah. Okay. So that is, and logic we just said, if stock prices track dividends over time, you know, I'm going to invest in a company and I'm going to expect to get my money back in dividends and appreciation, then the one-time effect of selling your stock actually makes that stock more attractive, or it makes it a more profitable investment. And it's not clear that a marginal 3 to 5% mm-hmm. movement in the long run will do anything to the allocation of capital. Because as long as there's plenty of people out there who are willing to invest in a company, the ELCA selling its stock in a company, in fact, makes that company more attractive for other people to buy. Because as it drops its stock price, it raises the rate of return in terms of the dividends as a share of the stock price. So it probably doesn't make a lot of difference to sell stock because we have a very efficient capital market that prices stocks very efficiently. If stock prices drive, somebody will buy them out or some other investors will come in and drive the stock price back up so that the stock price in relationship to its dividends stays within a fairly narrow range over time. So it's probably more effective to try to have a corporate voice than it is to try to affect the market.
And the studies that I've read, and the economists, John, I think tend to agree with you that this 3 to 5% doesn't do much good. But then should we ignore these socially responsible funds? Is that the solution? Well, not yes.
Say the ELCA and the investing or something, are they trying to change? Is it the best thing to change the policy of the company, or is it simply say we're not going to support that kind of activity? You know. Like tobacco.
Right.
For example, you know,
right.
We're not going to buy tobacco companies because tobacco boys kill people, so we don't want any part of that.
Well, and that's a good. That's a very, very good point. What is the issue here? Is the issue what is the genetic code of the ELCA? That is, what are our values, and how do we live within our values? Now, it may well be that we can't live within our values as the ELCA or as individual investors by investing in tobacco company stocks. May not make a huge difference, and wiping out tobacco may make no difference, but it is a question of our values. So there are really two questions here. We're called upon to invest consistently with our biblical principles and biblical values, and the fact that it may not wipe out tobacco or the nuclear power industry or the defense industry may not be relevant. Also, you know, I would say that with respect to South Africa and apartheid and the Sullivan principles, concerted action can work there. And concerted action is something that we ought to take into account. Now, was it simply the churches divesting there? No, it was beyond the churches. It was the college endowment funds, some pension funds divested. There was a media strategy there also. So we shouldn't say simply because it doesn't necessarily make a difference, the socially responsible funds, the concerted action can't work, or they ought not be considered.
Well, and I think the other thing that is at least interesting is what gets screened for socially responsible funds as well. I mean, you can go down a list of widely held companies within a socially responsible fund, and probably everybody in the room could find at least one company that they disagree with in terms of are they a responsible company or not.
Yes, yeah. You know, I was thinking about that as my son and I were having this discussion. He invests only in socially responsible funds. That is not my policy. And as I was drinking my glass of wine, thinking about investing in this fund that didn't invest in alcohol, I wonder. Now, there are socially responsible funds that go the other way, though. And they're not screening out wine and tobacco and alcohol, but they are looking for companies that do good things, and primarily in the environmental area, in the sustainability area. And my son invests his meager savings in those. He really likes those. Those tend to fluctuate, those funds, a little more than others, but there are a lot of ways to do it. Yes?
You mentioned the Presbyterian Fund, which is where I haven't had money.
Ah, yes.
So
how have they invested?
And it's interesting. They give you a 403B choice of about six different options. One of those is a socially responsible fund, but its five-year return, which is the benchmark I use, is the poorest of the six.
Yeah.
I mean, it's only 5 or 6% versus 10, 12, 15 on some of the other funds, you know, so it's kind of a quandary.
Yeah, it is kind of a quandary because organizations, pension funds, endowment funds, do have a duty to others for a return. When you hear from these funds that the returns are equal to funds that are more diverse, I don't know whether that's true or not. I mean, what I've read is it depends upon the time period. And some of the funds that are going after, for example, renewable energy efforts, companies that engage in renewable energy, that's a little risky, you know, because those have been bid way up in recent months. It is a quandary. Yes?
Since everybody, as this gentleman pointed out, everybody has different criteria as to what they're concerned about or what they would screen for. You may not screen for alcohol, or somebody else may. Somebody may be more concerned about guns, and somebody about, you know, tobacco. Short of going to whatever organization tracks those kind of issues, whether it's the Sierra Club for Sustainability or, you know, some other organization, is there like a one site that does it all, or one magazine?
There is one site, and I can't remember the name of it, but if you type in socially responsible funds in Google, you'll pull it up within the top five, which compares all of the rates of returns and then has links to the investment criteria. There are, I don't know, I looked at that website because my son and I were having this discussion. There are 100 plus or minus 30 funds there, and they're both negative screens and positive screens. And there are things that we ought to look at. For my son, for example, he can't feel good about any company that manufactures alcohol or tobacco. He's straight as an arrow, and good for him that he is investing with a conscience. So the beauty of those funds are, of course, is that there are many of them. You're going to have to suffer, probably, with respect to rate of return, not necessarily.
Will your son be supporting you in your old age?
I don't know. I hope so. You know, the fees tend to be a little higher with respect to these funds. But it is something that we ought to give serious consideration to. Think about that. Not necessarily that we should do, but it is an option for us to encourage social responsibility.
Steve, yes. In response to what you said, I think when you look at this thing historically, there are a lot of efforts to do this, and they're not amounting to much, as you said.
Right.
The one effort that did amount to something was the effort that gained evidently a critical mass sufficient to bring South Africa to its knees.
Right, right.
Well, it would be a mistake to say that our actions brought South Africa to its knees.
It was a worldwide effort.
Well, it would be much more accurate to say that South Africa did it. Right, I mean...
we put a stranglehold on them and they succumbed.
You don't think that we made any difference?
No, I think we made a difference. Yeah. I think we did make a difference. But I think it would be like saying Ronald Reagan brought the Soviet Union to its knees, right? Yeah, we did make a difference, but it was the Soviet Union figuring out its problems. There was a struggle in South Africa that went on for a long time, and South Africans liberated themselves.
All right, we can have that discussion over beer. But the point is that when the Presbyterian Church threatened the same action against Israel in the last year,
right.
Israel got very nervous because they saw the whole South Africa scenario coming at it.
Yeah.
Right or wrong, right?
Yeah, no, I'm not saying it didn't have an impact. I think it did have an impact, and it was important. And it was important here in shifting sort of not only American companies' policies towards South Africa, but American government policy towards South Africa, and which contributed to what was going on in the world, right? I think it's, you want to be careful about language which says that's what brought change to South Africa.
Okay.
Because I think that can...
it's
a contributing factor.
Yeah. Yes.
Do we know anything about what percent of owners divested, or at least threatened to divest, South African stock?
I don't know that. I'm sure there are studies out there, but...
That was the critical mass.
Yeah. It would be interesting. But I think the critical mass, you know, was more than simply divestment. That was a big piece of it, but a great media strategy.
We are too, yes.
I mean, you had General Motors, you had many of the larger companies.
And sanctions.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. That's right.
Sanctions,
you're right.
Maybe.
You're right.
Sanctions were
so, you know, there were a host of things. We've talked about, if we want corporate responsibility in previous sessions, what do we need? Responsible management, either responsible on their own motion or forced to be responsible in a strong system of law, sanctions in this case. Yes.
It would seem, though, that notwithstanding what he's saying, we have an example of a worldwide effort that appeared to work. in a circumstance where there was internal strife anyway. But shouldn't somebody be documenting more
absolutely
accurately?
Yeah.
Because we might want to copy that. If in fact we did have an impact, perhaps we could do that again.
Yeah. And I would submit to you that there are other worldwide efforts that are making a difference with respect to corporate responsibility. Bribes are viewed differently now than 20 years ago because of responsible corporate management and because of legislation, the Foreign Corrupt Practices Act. Over 50% of the largest corporations voluntarily report sustainability issues, the Global Reporting Initiative. That's incredible that corporations have signed on to do that, so many of them within the last 10 years. So this pressure helps a little bit, and that little bit continues to grow. What other difference can shareholders make? What about throwing the bums out? We don't like the way that they opened their factories abroad and disregard what we think to be good standards. What about electing new directors? Does that work?
I need more information here. Have you been to a shareholder meeting?
I have been to a shareholder meeting.
And do you get a vote in proportion to the shares?
You do.
So if you own one share, you might as well be over in the corner drinking beer.
Right. Well, that's right. The bottom line is that to change management doesn't work. The Lutheran Church has not gone in that direction. By publicly held corporations, Interfaith Center for Corporate Responsibility has not gone in that direction. And why is it? You show up at the board meeting if you can kind of figure out how to get the right to speak, which is not easy. And you say, I don't believe management is responsible. I think that you ought to elect my friends who are going to be responsible. Why won't that work? Because management has solicited proxies from everyone else and holds 98% of the vote, or 99% of the vote. So to throw the bums out simply does not work, and most organizations concerned about social responsibility have given up on that. Yeah.
The question over here about, you know, what we're doing, and who is this for? Is it for us as individuals and our conscience about how we feel about things, or is it effectively to make change? So if I want to take over a company, I don't have to buy 51% of the stock, but I probably got to buy 10. And then I got to start playing games with different people, right? So if we were serious about doing this, we could do it. I mean,
but it depends. The big question that I have here is it depends on the float, and it depends on the number of shares. You'll never do it with Philip Morris or with Altria.
Right.
You could do it with a small cap company. But again, to buy, you know, to buy 10% of a company and then start playing games
Wait. I mean, complete agreement with you in principle, but Philip Morris can be bought, right? I mean, it's a fact that there's
by
no company.
Warren Buffett, maybe.
But there's no company too big to buy.
Sure.
Okay. But it requires mobilizing resources in the capital market.
Yeah.
And so the question would be, and I think the answer is going to be no here. Should the Lutheran Church attempt to leverage its resources through the capital market to affect change in a particular company?
No, if they buy Philip Morris, they'll lose their shirts.
Okay, but there is an effect. I mean, there are tools out there, right, in our society. We don't see them as individuals because, in fact, if we act as individuals, they're not really, unless we're Warren Buffett, right? He's really not an individual.
There are tools. I mean, the ability to do it. I mean, so, you know, if some of these socially responsible mutual funds got large enough, they could do things like that. But the fact of the matter is that most, you know, who have been most active in corporate responsibility have given up in using the proxy machinery or the voting machinery or trying to take over.
But didn't CalPERS do it?
They tried to work on Philip when Philip Morris was Philip Morris. But again, the question you got to ask is, what would you do with Philip Morris if you bought it?
I mean,
you make this huge investment, and then what do? Shut down the tobacco operations? Because then you go right back into shareholder earnings and profitability.
I think the California Pension. So we've been having these sessions all week. So there are multiple dimensions here, about like transparency. So the California Pension Board, which is a big investor and does own 10% of some companies, could easily do it by moving its portfolio. went to some of the companies and said, you're not transparent enough. You know, we are going to sell our shares, and we're not going to invest in you, and we're going to encourage people not to. If you don't start giving us more information as a stock, and we're stockholders, and we, in fact, demand, we get that. And they did make a difference.
Yeah, pension funds can make a difference. Now, they've done it through shareholders' resolutions also. The problem is, with respect to the pension funds, usually when they make a difference, it's on matters of excessive executive compensation.
Right.
Mm-hmm. You know, it's bottom line matters, because what is their, they're held to a fiduciary duty to maximize the returns. I think you're right to buy Philip Morris and then to shut it down, there would be some fiduciary issues. Yes?
Maybe another way to look at it is, how can we make it, if business is about profit, how can we make it profitable for them to do the right thing and unprofitable to do the wrong thing? There was an organization in Canada that, a group of citizens that went about trying to make it unprofitable to log out, you know, the forest. And I think they started Green Label up there and got publicity on it so that it was more profitable for them to do their forest management correctly than incorrectly, because people purchased, you know, more, they got purchasing more of the wood products that were done in the sustainable manner.
Yeah, and that's a comment we should not overlook. We're looking here at what shareholders can do, but there are many routes to encourage corporate responsibility. And one route, of course, is through consumers and make it profitable to act responsibly by consumers buying your products. And we see some of that. We see some certifications with respect to clothing made under fair conditions. We shouldn't then forget that this is simply one tool, what shareholders can do.
You know, this, I don't really know. What does it take, typically, in terms of votes, to be able to get to speak at a meeting and to be able to put, have a chance to be able to elect somebody?
It is almost impossible with a publicly held corporation to elect someone. Right. You can nominate, but you'll never get the proxies. To speak at a meeting varies from corporation to corporation. The use of shareholders resolutions, usually you don't speak at the meeting. Often you can't speak at the meeting,
right,
but you put it in the proxy machinery. So you get your printed statement that goes to shareholders. Let me just, before we talk about shareholders' resolutions, the Presbyterian Church, and the reason I mention the Presbyterian Church is that their website is much more detailed than the ELCA website. It recommends three things for investors: considering socially responsible funds, aggressive use of shareholders' resolutions, and investing locally, and investing in organizations that might provide small loans to local startup businesses, or small loans to businesses in Mexico or Africa, and so on, that provide some rate of return, but not a very significant rate of return. The social responsibility page of both the ELCA and the Presbyterian Church is linked to basically the same organizations that do that. So, socially responsible funds, they recommend aggressive use of shareholders' resolution and some portion of the portfolio to do more social good with. Let's talk about shareholders' resolutions. What does it take to issue a shareholders' resolution? There are hundreds, if not thousands, of shareholders' resolutions each year. Many of those shareholders' resolutions are set forth by churches, by those associated with the Interfaith Center for Corporate Responsibility, and that would be the largest group. Socially responsible mutual funds are a large group. Sometimes the pension funds do shareholders' resolutions, often related to excessive management compensation. What does it take to do one? Well, it takes owning $2,000 worth of stock. So the threshold is pretty low there for a year. If you own $2,000 worth of stock for a year, or your church endowment fund does, you can do a shareholders resolution. You are entitled then, following the company's rules with respect to timely submission, to submit a 500-word resolution and statement of support. The company is required then to put that in their proxy solicitation. So when you get your cards, or the church does, on who you're going to vote for as a director, those 500 words have to be in there, unless they have a reason to exclude it. The company has the right to advise its shareholders to vote against it. And you almost always see that. They advise the shareholders to vote against it. Typically, this ties management's hands. This interferes with our ability to do our mission and so on. Now, the company can knock these things out pretty easily if you don't do them right. And those of you with an organization that are interested in doing a shareholders resolution, it is a little tricky under the SEC rules. You cannot usually require the board to do something unless it is a policy matter. It's a day-to-day matter. It's not subject to a shareholders resolution. Most shareholders, why? Because the board manages the company. Shareholders worry about policy matters. And when shareholders get into managing the company, the Securities Exchange Commission will say no shareholders resolutions. So, for example, companies can omit a resolution if it's a supermarket chain that says we won't sell tobacco, because the Securities Exchange Commission says that's a day-to-day business determination whether you sell tobacco or not. But companies may not omit such resolutions as a comprehensive view of employment discrimination, review of employment discrimination policies with the recommendation that sexual orientation be included, report on whether there's a glass ceiling at the corporation, asking management to follow International Labor Organization principles, international principles about fair employment of labor, comparative pay issues, executive compensation issues. So these have to relate to a policy. They can't relate to whether this supermarket's going to sell cigarettes or not. It has to be a philosophical policy. Now, where's the line between a management decision and a policy decision? That's tough. There have been a number of shareholders' resolutions asking management to add sexual orientation to the list of prohibited discrimination. Sometimes the Securities Exchange Commission has said, no, that's a management decision. Other times, if it's part of a broader review of employment practices generally, the SEC has said, no, that's a policy consideration. That can go ahead. Management can submit their own proposal. They can get ahead of the curve and knock your proposal out if they submit a contradictory proposal. Management can submit a proposal that has part of your proposal but omits part of your proposal, but if it's close, similar proposals, they can knock yours out. Now, if you look at what the ELCA, is it kind of an impossible thing to get a shareholder's resolution done? Because the one time I did it for the Presbyterian, this Presbyterian church in West Allis, you'd get this letter back, although I'd researched it and felt sure that we could do it, of the 20 reasons why your proposal is all screwed up and 20 reasons why they're not going to do it. You can do it. If you look at the ELCA has submitted about 8 resolutions this year. Only one has been knocked out. That is a reporting with respect to HIV and policies concerning AIDS, which gets down fairly far down into the detail of the company. So with good lawyers, you can do this. You can work your way through it. If you lose, can you resubmit these? Well, you can resubmit them if you lose. There are waning periods, particularly if the first time around you got less than 3% of the vote. Normally you're going to have to wait then 3 to 5 years. Are they effective? Are they ever passed?
Rarely.
Yeah, rarely. So does that mean they're ineffective?
No.
Why not?
Because it raises the issue. It drives the issue forward. And I think it kind of connects back to the conversation about South Africa and apartheid. It's about creating the first ripple of waves in organizations to create change. And to believe that it's an ineffective model would say, well, there's nothing we can do about it. So
yeah.
I think just the act of starting that ripple makes a difference.
Yeah. And why do they get voted down? Let's just make sure we understand that. Why do they get voted down routinely?
For the same reason you swatted the mosquitoes up on them.
Complacency.
They're pesky.
Yeah. Well, they're pesky. What happens is, let's suppose that we want a company that does not report sustainability issues to report sustainability issues. We're going to put then in the shareholders' resolution, whereas 50% of the Fortune 500 companies report on sustainability issues, whereas we think it'll give this company a competitive advantage to be transparent, whereas if this company is sustainable in the long run, profitability will be greater. Therefore, we recommend to management that they adopt the sustainability guidelines of the Global Reporting Initiative. Half the companies have done that. What is management going to say? Management is going to say that we're already concerned about sustainability, that these guidelines are flawed, or that these guidelines tie our hands, or that it'll be an administrative nightmare to comply with these guidelines, or they'll reduce our flexibility. They have 99% of the shareholders turn in their proxy cards, mail them back, giving management the right to vote how management recommends. So if management is opposed to it, it's going down. But you think that it might start the ball rolling.
Yeah. Are they at all effective in bringing management to the table to discuss the issue?
They're quite effective in bringing management to the table to discuss the issue. If you look at the Interface Center for Corporate Responsibility website, I would say in about half the resolutions that are submitted, they are at least temporarily withdrawn because of talks with management. If you can get to the table, and if management is willing to talk with you, there, I think, is some real potential to be effective. If you look at success stories on the website, they just convinced Kmart to adopt the, I don't remember which, international standards with respect to child labor and contracting out for child labor. That was based on a church resolution, then a dialogue, and Kmart through Sears. Who owns who? Kmart owns Sears.
Is the
They harmonize their policy. One had a looser policy than the other. That is an example. The example that I gave and with Alice Chalmers giving the factory workers some notice. Of the current resolutions submitted by the ELCA, there are about eight of them. About five of them have been withdrawn because of productive discussion. So I think that discussion can be productive. Yes?
It is... the threat of consumer boycott, what makes those discussions effective? There has to be some kind of stick in the background, you know, for the companies to worry even about sitting down.
Yeah,
with
let's ask about that. I mean, what negotiating leverage do you have? When I was trying to get this plant closing agreement from Alice Chalmers, we had very little leverage. What do they care about this little Presbyterian church in West Dallas? Well, we had a media strategy that helped a bit. I also believe that with respect to some of these corporate CEOs, you can appeal to their better side. I think of myself as the CEO of a small college. A group of students came in and they said, you know, this recycling plan that we have at Augustana is a name only. It doesn't, you know, it really doesn't work. Here's, you're presiding over a college with a lousy recycling plan. They said, well, I had a little flash of defensiveness for about 5 seconds, and then I thought, well, maybe they're right. They had done their homework. So I think we can appeal to their better side in many cases. But what leverage can we use? Now, what we're seeing is that the ELCA is very much focused on sustainability issues in their current resolutions, though there are hosts of them. And let's assume that we want to go into a corporate headquarters. They've agreed to meet with representatives of the church. They have not been part of the Global Reporting Initiative, which reports about sustainability issues. It doesn't mean that they're sustainable. It reports about sustainability issues. But it's a first step. When you report, there is some pressure, is there not, to make sure you have a good report. What are we going to say to the company? Dean Foods, for example, does not comply with the Global Reporting Initiative.
Well, you might want to talk about how many ELCM members there are in the nation.
Okay.
You know, you use numbers. You use the concern that we have for whatever the issues are with
Foods. Mm-hmm. We're going to align ourselves not only within the ELCA, we're going to align ourselves with the Presbyterians, the Methodists, the Catholics, and on down the line. Now, I don't know how much leverage that gives us. Well, we'll advise them to divest. They may or may not believe that. Here's what I would do if I were going into a corporation asking them to participate in the Global Reporting Initiative on behalf of the ELCA. I would make that point, certainly. We would also make the point about why this is the right thing to do, to be concerned about sustainability. Then I'd say, are you aware of Dean Foods? Dean Foods had a shareholders resolution, just like our shareholders resolution, asking the company to develop a definition of sustainability, then do a company-wide review about company policies, and then develop strategies to achieve sustainability. 33% of the shareholders voted for that.
So you're just using that as a bargaining chip of the handlers out there, and it may fall on you, and you can choose it how you like it.
Now, I just said that these things always fail. They only get 1 or 2%. Why did Dean Food have 33%?
Single shareholders or
large? I don't think so. That could be. That's not my guess. Large shareholders. I bet the pension funds got behind it. And if you can get the pension funds behind it, and pension funds might be concerned about sustainability. If I were a manager of a pension fund and looking at investments and thinking, now, am I concerned about quarterly earnings, or am I concerned about more long-term sustainability, since my payouts are long-term, I might be concerned about sustainability. So I do think there's some leverage that can be used. Now, what do you think Dean Foods is thinking right now? They opposed the effort of the shareholders, and this was Dean Foods, interestingly. It was the New York City Employees Retirement System that set forth that. They opposed the effort of the retirement system. I would imagine New York City got their buddies in California and Ohio and wherever else to vote against that. You're sitting in that boardroom, 33% of the shareholders recommend that. Ouch, is right.
I think ultimately the management doesn't want to be too far away from the majority stockholders. I mean, they don't want their own management systems disrupted. So they're going to kind of move as the winds move. And so 33% isn't the majority, but it certainly makes, as a manager of an organization, if you start feeling that kind of pressure on you, you're going to certainly look at, okay, how can we get into compliance? What is it going to cost us? They would start to do a larger investigation of, you know, is this really something we want to be on this side of?
Right.
And I think as management, that is a serious issue when any time you're dealing with these kind of.
I think you're right. Yes.
Well, we heard Jim Wallace. I don't know if people know him, God's Politics, but he talked about how we don't necessarily always have to. You're talking about replacing the management or whatever. He said, you don't really have to replace the management. You replace the way the wind blows. And he said people will hold their finger up and they kind of test which way the wind is blowing, and they will change sometimes their strategies based on that pressure that you're.
I think there's something to that. You can say the way the wind blows, or the way the societal norms are changing, or, you know, the other guys, primarily guys in these corporations at the country club, they're doing Global Reporting Initiative. Why aren't you? So I think pressure is significant there. Now, let's assume that the ELCA, which is really focusing on the Global Reporting Initiative on sustainability, is successful. And let's assume that Dean Foods now has agreed, because the ELCA is going to go at them again. We can go at them again in a year if we get 33% of the vote in the previous year. So the ELCA goes after them, and either they agree to a report or we get 50% of the vote. Does it make any difference? Make any difference to Dean Foods? They don't want to do this in the first place. They're not excited about reporting on sustainability. That's why they opposed it. So we force this resolution upon them. Remember, the resolution is that we recommend to shareholders, and that we recommend to directors that they comply with the Global Reporting Initiative and report sustainability.
Ultimately, it's cost-benefit, isn't it? I mean, for the management, how much does it cost to fight it? How much does it cost to go with it?
Yeah. Well, now let's see. It's a recommendation to management. Do you think they're going to agree to actually do it? The shareholders have simply recommended it. Now, why didn't the shareholders' resolution say, management, we require you to do it? Because the SEC would throw it out. That's a management decision, not a policy decision. Do you think they'll say no after a successful shareholders' resolution? Well, they don't want to do it. But why do you think they'll do it?
Because if you can demonstrate that you can mobilize 50% of the vote, they're going to start worrying about your job.
Yeah, then they think about John's next step, or the bums. If they can organize, the shareholders can organize to pass something like this, even 33% is the next step that New York Pension Fund will get together with their buddies in California and throw the bums out through the proxy machinery. Okay, so management then says at Dean Foods, we're going to do it. We're going to report on our sustainable practices, and we're going to go through the list in reporting on our management practices toward child labor, toward human rights, toward reinvestment in the community, technology transfer, and so on. Do you think the fact that they're part of the Global Reporting Initiative and reporting will actually change their conduct?
Depends on what their conduct is now, but one presumes it's not stellar.
Yeah, let's presume that it's not stellar. It might be, but let's presume that it's not stellar by opposing it. That's fair. Do you think it'll change anything?
Doesn't it depend maybe on the watchdog efforts of the public and who's monitoring those reports and then reporting them to the public and what kind of response the public has?
Yeah, and there is a watchdog effort. These reports are public and are compared, and corporations are scored by various organizations. Now, some of the scoring isn't very precise or very good, but when you need to be transparent, are you going to be more responsible in your conduct?
I would think so.
Yes. Yeah, I would think so. I would think so. If you are transparent and you're not responsible in your conduct, you're going to wonder about the next shareholder's resolution. If the report card is that we're not sustainable, and we did what you wanted, shareholders, but we're not sustainable, what's going to happen next? Well, there may be a shareholder's resolution then that will look at the environment, look at labor practices, and so on. So is it an efficient process? Is it a slow process? Is it a time-consuming process? Yes, it is. But can it be an effective process? Yes. Comments about shareholders' resolutions? Yes.
You've often mentioned the Anti-Foreign Corrupt Practices
Act. Yes.
Is that the name of the law?
Yeah, Foreign Corrupt Practices Act.
Okay, now there was a law passed that had far-reaching ramifications.
I agree with that.
And this sounds very tedious. Would you say that the legislative route is much more effective and a much more efficient use of energy toward these ends than this path?
Perhaps. The legislative route, in other words, why not just mandate mandate that the legislature can do that, Congress can do that, and tie it to the tax code. If you want this or that tax rate, if you want the current tax rate, you do this, we double it. If you don't do that. Would that be more effective? Perhaps. The Foreign Corrupt Practices Act, many recall, was a very controversial thing. I think that was during the Carter years. Does that sound
70s, yeah.
Right? Thereabouts, it's going to put us at a competitive disadvantage. We're not going to be able to do business. That, by and large, I don't think has proven to be true. So it might be more effective. Is the current president or Congress going to do something like,
no,
like
absolutely
that.
Absolutely not. But
yeah, yeah.
Suppose Congress got to the point where they would just apply the regulations that are against the domestic regulations against the tobacco industry were applied internationally. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, in some ways, tobacco is a kind of a weak entity right now.
Mm-hmm.
And we can pick on them, we can tax
right.
them. But suppose we applied those domestic regulations to the tobacco company internationally. That could be a failed blow.
Sure. Sure. And I think to answer your question, now you asked, if we want to stop bribery, was the Foreign Corrupt Practices Act more effective than the other way, a raft of shareholder resolutions? Absolutely. Absolutely. In part, though, our concern about corporate responsibility is due, and making differences as a shareholder is due to the fact that the other ways to regulate corporations may not be effective. It's hard to imagine in the short run that we're going to get the United States Congress to talk about this. The United States Congress has effectively required audits of financial statements through the SEC and filings and so on. Why can't they do this? Yeah, John?
I really think that that is an important thing to think about, that it's really that you can, in order to regulate practice, you got to use the criminal or the civil code in some kind of way. And that gets hard to do. I mean, we've had antitrust laws on the books for over a century, and they're extremely difficult to enforce. And the enforcement changes. But the government's done quite well, actually, at increasing the amount of transparency. And so, and that lets markets work in ways that we've talked about, sometimes good, you know, sometimes not good. That asking the SEC to include something about sustainability in the K-9, K-10 filings that companies have to make with the SEC every year would have a dramatic impact. It would probably end up changing. One thing you haven't mentioned is that if the company is forced to gather information on sustainability, the company now has information on sustainability that it probably didn't gather before.
Right,
you change the information set, and that will change perhaps what companies do.
Well, something like the Sarbanes Act was about transparency, right? I mean, that is reasonably well worked to force accountability from the CEOs of America, hasn't it?
There would be those that debate that. I would agree with that, but Sarbanes-Oxley has been overall a positive thing.
Well, and that, again, is from the scale of the issue. And
right.
That's what we're talking about here now, is scalability. When something so dramatic happens in terms of the falsification of meddling with books on such a large
yeah.
scale, with Enron as an example, that the government action becomes the clear and effective route versus however many thousand shareholders' resolutions to enforce that kind of thing.
But the issue, I think there's a difference between trying to affect behavior directly and trying to affect behavior indirectly by creating more information about what's going on. You know, so, I mean, the Sarbanes-Oxley and these and transparency is about markets can make decisions about what the firms are doing if they have information. So let's get more information and then be able to enforce more responsibility.
And it's also a layer of accountability.
What does Sarbanes actually do?
Well, Sarbanes does a lot in terms of regulation of accounting firms. Certainly, a greatest conflict of interest. Rules, independence of boards. I think that Sarbanes is it overkill? Maybe it's overkill. But Sarbanes, you know, even at Augustana College, I have to sign those financial statements at August, and it makes me sweat.
Right. It wasn't transparency. It was that you're now liable.
Yeah.
So it was a liability assignment. It had relatively little to do with transparency.
Yeah, the system got out of control. Congress perhaps overreacted.
I'll point out that there's now a raft of companies trying to go private.
Right.
Is that a good thing?
To get out of Sarbanes, I don't think so.
And
but,
when you sign those forms, do you actually know exactly what you're signing?
You know, I actually, it makes me nervous to sign those forms. I get the vice presidents in the room and say, look, I got to sign these forms. And if there's anything that I should know about, tell me. Because, I don't say it this direct. You're not here if you don't tell me and there's something goes wrong. I don't say it that directly. you know, for Little Augustana College, does it make any difference? Does it hurt? I don't know.
What's the cost of compliance for you?
Well, for us, it's not very much. Sarbanes really doesn't apply to us because we're a nonprofit organization, but the accounting firms have changed their procedures and then applied some of that to nonprofit organizations. There is a Sarbanes-Oxley Act in the works to apply to nonprofit organizations through the tax code. If you want your tax exemption, you'll do this, that, and the other.
And it's also made access to those accounts very difficult for non-public companies.
Yeah. You know, as we think about shareholders' resolutions and getting back to whether they make a difference or not, the ELCA has been very targeted in their shareholders' resolutions to matters of labor fairness and global sustainability. The Interfaith Center for Corporate Responsibility has not been so targeted. They can't be targeted because they have 200 and some members, but their priorities are reverse global warming, stop genetically modified foods, work with retailers of video games to become more accountable, ending tobacco advertising, preventing militarization of outer space, ending foreign military sales, and so on. The ELCA, and I think appropriately so, has been a bit more targeted in this regard. Now, the mainline churches have just been beating these corporations up with respect to sustainability standards. More than half of them now are part of the Global Reporting Index. Imagine if we have a change in when George Bush completes his term, we'll have a new president, maybe we'll have a fresh view. And imagine if John's proposal comes forward. We're going to require you not only through financial reporting to report financial results, but sustainability results. You have over half the corporations doing it already. Has the church altered the equation now? Has the church made it easier for the political process to happen? Because they have bludgeoned the church and the pension funds, these corporations, to do it. And I think they have. I think they have. Any concluding comments or questions before we close? I'm well aware that I'm the only thing between you and dinner. Well, thank you so much. For those that came in late, I really appreciate you spending time with me. I appreciate the comments. I'm headed back home tomorrow, but I've written about these matters. Check out the Augustana website, the presidential page, and my writings are on that page if you have any more curiosity about corporate responsibility. Thanks a lot.